Hey, everybody, this is Nothing to Write Home About, and I'm Matt Pryor. Welcome to the newly relaunched podcast. It's been a couple of years, but I thought that in this time of social distance and staying at home, which I hope you're all doing, it'd be a good way for me to catch up with people that I haven't seen or talked to in a while and see how they're doing and maybe take everybody's mind off of the world at large for an hour. Our first episode is with Chris Conley, who is the singer and songwriter of Saves the Day. He's a good friend. We've had many long conversations about life, and he's a good person to talk to in times like this because he, more than anything, tries to stay positive, and I think that's a really helpful thing to have right now. I've been doing lots of live streams on Facebook and Instagram and really just taking lots of walks and working in the garden and hanging out with the family and staying away from people. I still have my Downright store is open if you want to order a custom song. And, you know, we're looking to set up possibly like a Patreon thing in the future of doing new music and writing and recording. Been writing Radar State songs the last couple of days, and that seems to be going pretty well. Hopefully once this is all over and we can all get in the same room together again, we can make another Radar State record. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now. But anyway, in the meantime, let's listen to the conversation with Chris, and I'll talk to you guys next week. Hello.
Hey, dude.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, hold on. Let me plug in my headphones, actually. I thought when you said FaceTime we were going to do video, so I had it all.
Oh, do you want to do video?
No, not at all. I'd much rather. I was like, oh, I didn't know I needed to be ready for my close-up.
You're always ready for your close-up.
Oh,
hey,
dear.
I have a space heater running. Can you hear it?
I cannot.
Okay. Then I'm not going to worry about it. It got shitty out today here.
Did it?
It's been like super nice, like 60s and 70s and sunny, and then now it's fucking freezing rain.
It's emo outside.
I guess that's one way to put it. How is it in Chico?
It's absolutely glorious here. I just took my dog on like a 3-mile walk in the park.
Nice.
Yeah.
I went out with one of my dogs this morning and tried to go for a walk and then was getting like slipping on ice and slush in the streets.
Oh my gosh, it's really shitty there.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just supposed to be like this today, I guess. But we're being punished.
Oh, I know exactly for not caring enough.
Oh man, so we haven't done this in a bit.
I know. So I'm glad that you're doing this again, because I mean, I don't know if you hear, you know, from your fans and stuff, but I certainly hear people have been missing it.
Well, I got kind of burnt on it, you know.
Yeah,
was kind of into doing other stuff. It's actually kind of interesting because I kind of dropped off of everything and put all my eggs into one basket that ended up being Get Up Kids. And
yeah,
I'm finding now that like...
It's a great basket.
Huh?
It's a great basket.
Well, right, but that's not what I mean. But it's more like, I'm like, oh, right, I like some of these other songs and these other things that I have done. Like I like the new AM stuff and I like the,
yeah, dude, it's great.
And I'm just like
something I would imagine is so fun for you because you do have an enormous body of work. It keeps things interesting.
Yeah. It's actually been really, really fun. Today I did a live stream where I did nothing but covers and, I signed off, you know, when it was over. And then I was like, oh shit, I forgot to do Freakish, so I did an encore. I did a
Oh my gosh, amazing.
A live stream encore.
That's so dope. That's awesome. I'm honored, of course.
Have you been doing many of those? Any much online stuff?
Yeah, actually a ton. I mean, a ton for me. You know, I did one just yesterday. I did an hour-long all requests set for hosted by Sennheiser on their Instagram, that microphone company.
Yeah.
So,
how'd you get hooked up with them?
I guess they saw I did this digital happy hour on Saves the Day's YouTube channel.
Oh yeah. You were telling me about that.
Yeah. And, I guess somebody saw it and asked if I would do something like that on their Instagram. So we said yes immediately because, I mean, they're great company. And it was fun. I've been really enjoying the live stream thing.
Yeah, I've been – do you find that you get like anxious about it at all, like pre-game?
I do, for sure. Like days beforehand. Like I have one coming up on Monday hosted by Alternative Press. And I'm like, you know, I wake up and I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to play on that? How am I going to make this one different? Yeah, so I fully much more so than just like being on tour when it's just happening on autopilot, basically.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's kind of the same thing, but it's like a whole new set of anxiety.
Yeah, exactly. You're feeling that too.
and I was really surprised by it. You know what I mean?
You've been doing it every day, basically, right?
Give or take. I mean, I hit a pretty. I ended up in kind of a really dark headspace yesterday, and I think the whole, I was listening to a lot of Fountains of Wayne, you know?
So, I know. I can't believe that, dude.
And that just kind of, I don't know.
I think like, I didn't, that does, I, it I makes never, it even more real because of, I mean, just how close that connection is to our world. I know even like Chris Caraba even worked with them. Motion City worked with them.
Yeah, I think they both did records with him. But did you ever know him?
Did you meet him?
I never met him. This is Adam Schlesinger.
Right.
We're talking about who passed away from the coronavirus. He was the singer of Fountains of Wayne.
Yeah, and just yesterday.
And a fucking just brilliant pop songwriter.
2 days ago. Yeah. He's oh my God. He was a genius.
It's one of those things where you kind of like, I remember hearing like, you know who wrote that Thing You Do song is that guy from Fountains of Wayne. And I was like, huh,
yeah.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. You know?
Yeah, like, yeah. Unbelievable songwriting. Especially, I think, for that movie, because they were doing like all of the 60s tricks.
Right.
All the pop. It was like the perfect Beatles song.
Well, and I heard an interview with him one time where he was talking about the trick is you got to write a song that's hooky enough that it catches you immediately, but that you don't get sick of by the end of the movie.
Because oh, wow.
They have to play it like, you know, 20 times in the movie or whatever.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
And I'm still not sick of that song.
I know. It's so good. I'm going to have to watch that movie, actually, in honor of him. It's been a while.
Did you ever play at the Wayne, New Jersey skate rink back in the day?
No, we played Firehouse. I don't know if that was the same.
Was that in?
Later turned into a skate rink, but no, we never played specifically the skate rink.
Is that where they came from?
That's
what I was going to say. Like we played there. Let's see. This would have been like late 97 maybe, and it was us and Jimmy Eat World and that band Antarctica that was one of the guys from Christy Front Drive.
Oh yeah.
And or maybe some of the guys from Christy Front Drive. But I remember we were driving into Wayne, New Jersey, and we passed this, you know, those like roadside things that are like they sell like bird baths and statues and
yeah.
And it was called Fountains of Wayne.
Oh, no kidding.
And we all like freaked out. We're like, oh my God, that's a real thing. Because you're kind of like, what a weird band name, you know?
It is. And they were from New Jersey, right?
I guess so.
Yeah.
Or they were just really into bird baths.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a classic spot.
I don't know. It's a bit of a tangent, I guess. But I just didn't feel up to doing it.
I have a lot of friends that were really affected by that too. Like people that, you know, when they were at that formative stage in life, his songs were important, made an impact.
I remember.
It's crazy to lose someone like that. I mean, it's just this whole thing is gnarly.
How are you holding up?
I'm okay. I mean, I think, you know, like life itself so difficult, like on a fundamental level, that for noble truth of Buddhism that it's suffering is like
say that again.
I mean,
a noble truth of Buddhism, what?
that life is suffering.
Oh, right.
But then you add, you know, chaos and turmoil on top of that. And I think if anything, I can just feel like what other people are feeling right now, like as if, you know, their emotions are sort of in the air, you mm-hmm. know, like in the ether. And so I've just been like finding it important to do like my deep breathing, like consciously a lot more. And almost as if to like help calm other people. And like,
what do you mean by that?
Like, if I feel like a wave of anxiety, almost like it, like the wind coming through the window,
mm-hmm.
I will breathe into it to calm it down, consciously calm it down. Like, I don't typically feel those things. So I think it's, because, you know, we're all in this like ocean of life together,
mm-hmm.
you know, and all the molecules are actually connected physically. You can actually feel the palpable level stress.
You think so? You can feel it like around you?
I mean, I'm doing the social distancing, but I will take my dog to the park for the essential exercise. And you know, you can't help but feel, you know, like if you pass somebody and you just feel the emotional resonance. I mean, I think that's also scientifically factual. You know, like the vibrations of the molecules are tangible.
See, I think I like it better when it sounds more, you know,
hippie-ish.
Yeah. Just like,
yeah, well, I think like just to simplify it, I've just let's say everybody in the world is stressed out right now. So I'm doing my part to stay as calm as possible.
Yeah. How's your kid taking it?
She's okay. I think she just wishes like she could see her friends.
Yeah.
And I think in California is getting pretty close. I think Kansas already did this, right? They canceled the whole school year.
Yeah, we were the first state to just outright cancel the whole thing.
Yeah, so they're talking about that on NPR here in California. But we have some family members that are actual teachers, and they've already heard that that's happening. So she's ready for that, to hear that news, but not psyched about it at all. But, you know, so we've been hanging out here at the house, and, you know, like we had movie night last night.
What'd you watch?
Which is, you know, we watched the new Jumanji movie.
Oh, how was it?
It was good. It was fun.
Yeah.
Awkwafina is in it. I think she's really funny.
Yeah, I like her.
But Luella's whole generation, or I don't know, a lot of them love Danny DeVito for some reason. I don't know, like he's crossed over and he's in the movie, so she was psyched on that.
What do they know, like, him, what do they know him from? I'm assuming she's not watching It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I know, not yet. I keep telling her she's gonna love it when she's old enough. But we actually did watch Rob McElhenney's new, I think that's how you pronounce his name.
Yeah.
His new show, Mythic Quest. Did you see that?
I haven't seen it yet. Is it on? Can you?
It's on Apple TV, Apple TV Plus or whatever. But we really liked that. And it was the first thing we had sat down together to watch in quite a long time, because she's been, you know, on that like social, that social wave of her life for so long now, like just interested in hanging out with friends.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a long time since I've been able to like take her to the movies, which used to be one of my favorite things to do. And that, you know, then for a few years now, it's been like, can you just drop me off on the curb? And you know, so I have missed that. So it was really awesome when she was like, hey, let's sit down and watch this thing together. And I was like, really cool. so we'd really like that.
How old is she now?
She's going to be 15 in May.
Wow.
So yeah, next month we're there. And Lily's about to turn 18, right?
Tomorrow.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's wild. You have to tell her that I say happy birthday if you remember.
All right, I will.
I'm trying to think.
I want to write like a quarantine birthday song.
Oh, you definitely should.
Like something that should be like something that people can sing to each other on when they, because this is going to keep happening.
That's true. Write the quarantine birthday anthem.
Happy quarantine too. Nah, let's do.
Oh yeah, that's nuts though. I can't imagine that moment when you turn 18 is so. It's like such a huge moment in life.
I've been trying to think of like the closest thing I can like relate to any of this is like living through the period after 9/11.
Right.
And as far as like just this impending sense of dread that the world is ending. And I just remember on 9/11 was the first time we heard Lily's heartbeat.
Oh my gosh.
We went to the doctor that morning. And so that's always been kind of a,
no kidding.
Like a,
was that before that all happened or was it while it was happening?
We saw it on the news. We watched the news for like an hour and then we drove to the doctor and it was just, so
I had
this really vivid memory of driving down 23rd Street in Lawrence and some guy pulling up next to us and telling us to roll our window down. And he's like, are you listening to this? Can you believe what's happening?
Oh my God.
And it just like out of, and he wasn't like being a dick about it or anything. It was just genuine like.
Yeah, just sheer shock.
Yeah. But.
And the shared experience of it all.
There was just this, it was a thing of like having that incredibly positive thing happen on the same day. It made it seem like there was a little bit more balance in the world, even though that was there, of course.
Yeah, because that's it right there. That's everything, basically.
Like, you know, like, when you, like, I don't know if you.
Mass destruction and the miracle of life.
Yeah. So I'm looking for that right now. Just like.
Yeah.
Some sort.
Well, it's wild. Now she's 18. You know, she's an adult. She'll be an adult tomorrow.
That's weird.
Yeah.
You
done good, man. She made it.
She made it to 18.
Yeah.
She made it just in time for the pandemic to kill us all.
Yeah. Well, I don't feel that way.
No, I know. I'm just.
Yeah.
When I get in my negative headspace, I've been waking up some days with dread, you know?
Yeah.
Which is kind of a new thing for me. Like I've always,
right.
I don't know if you and I have talked about this much since I kind of had this revelation, but I kind of really realized how bad my anxiety gets sometimes. And I don't think I ever like acknowledged it. I mean, I remember, you know, I remember one time we started the Where's the Band tour and I just was kind of like, why am I even here? Nobody cares about my songs. Like why? I just got in my own head and I got really, really freaked out. And I realized now that that's, you know, actual anxiety and not just a normal way to be.
That wasn't true. Yeah. So. I mean that, yeah. And that's tough. I mean, do you have anything that you do to like deal with it when it comes up?
I use that like Headspace app and I do meditations with that. I really like that. I have a hard time. Like, I know like the way that you meditate, the way you've described it to me, I have a hard time like quieting my mind.
I did it
on
first.
My own.
Yeah.
You did it first.
Yeah. Until I found this technique called naming. It's so easy. I've learned it in this book called A Path with Heart by this guy, Jack Kornfield. Kornfield with the K. It's a really cool book and it's written in this very conversational style. So it feels like a friend just sort of talking about life.
Okay.
And it's not like some hoity-toity, heady spiritual book. But anyway, he's got lots of like tips and tricks. He has a meditation retreat out here at a place called Spirit Rock. But anyway, in that book, he has this one little trick called naming. And that was like the key for me to like unlocking the ability to be with my thoughts and not like try to fight them away. And all you do is just name them as they come. So, you know, if you're having that existential dread or whatever, you wake up, you're feeling it, you just name it to yourself. Like, say, I'm feeling this right now. I'm feeling fill in the blank. You know, and it's insanely easy, and it doesn't sound like much, but it's like counter to how we usually are, which is trying to force the thoughts to go away.
Mm-hmm.
That, and you just go, oh, I'm thinking this right now.
Yeah, that's kind of similar to like both in just meditation and then like talking to my therapist of just like these things come up and you can't, you have to kind of like.
And it could be a reflex too, like a reflex of your mind, the way, so the same way your knee would like jerk if they, when they hit you with those mallets.
It's just been, it's been a, an interesting experience for me of just this sort of like, okay, I'm feeling this feeling and I hear you and you have, you know, for lack of a better term, value. And, but this isn't how I want to feel. So I need.
Right. Oh yeah. Cool. Good. I remember that too. When I was in therapy with this awesome Buddhist therapist, he was saying that like, he's like, you can be discerning about those thoughts. In other words, like, what do you think about it? So like listening and that, you know, you'd listen for what it was trying to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
What are you trying to say right now? You know, and then you'd hear it, be open to it instead of trying to fight away. And then also ask, well, what do I think about that? And that was the first time anybody, like, I never realized I could also have a point of view.
Which is a funny thing to think about, considering that you're a songwriter and a front man. And
you know what I mean? Like, it was like, you know, I was always giving voice to like these oppressive feelings and thoughts, you know, like then they weren't even, when I looked into it, they weren't even my thoughts, you know, it was like what other people had put on me, what society had put on me.
Do you think that's still the case?
Not anymore. Thank God. I mean, I learned how to do all this stuff when I was starting when I was 24.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's 16 years later now. I have like a much different relationship with like my inner life. And thank God it's like there's no like stress or there's no weight there. It's just like breathing easy. Thank the sweet Lord. And another thing is like if what's wild is like if somebody like me could do that coming from like such a chaotic, tumultuous inner life, you know, coming from having that, then I think anybody could find that.
Tell me, can you tell me about that? Like I think I've only really known you since you've been, you know, working towards this, you know, this, yeah. like a piece, but like, what was it?
I think there's like, moments if you can look back on times like when we were in like Japan and Australia together,
mm-hmm.
like I was having a particularly hard time, but that was like right before I discovered, that was like a year before I found this new way of existing within myself.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, like times like I'd be tied up in a ball of stress before a show. And I always bring this up to you, but you came up to me, you know, and I was like worried about not being able to sing because I was sick. And you're like, what are you worried about? You know, they're excited that you're here, you know? but I don't know if you remember like how stressed out I was. It was almost like I swallowed up all the air in the room. And so that's why you could tell that I was really going through it. And so you came up to, you know, soften me up a little bit and it worked. That stuck with me. You know, at that time in my life, I didn't have any tricks or anything.
It's interesting
to deal with that.
It's interesting that you, I don't remember saying that to you. I mean, I agree with that. And I'd have to like take my own advice sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But, and I'm sure somebody told me that, but it's interesting that like I was giving you advice on trying to like, you not be stressed out when I was at like one of the darkest times in my life then. Cause I mean,
yeah,
I
what was happening with you guys?
I quit the band on that trip.
Yeah.
So
Oh yeah, I remember really well. It was gnarly to be there.
It was just, you know, it's just like you need a break, you know? And it's just like we'd been going for 10 solid years and I had just started a family and it's just like I needed a break. And and I was just getting really down about it because I was just, I kind of struggle with this idea of being more than one thing because like, I think I've finally kind of come to terms with the reality that like, I'm always going to be known for, it's always going to say of the Get Up Kids after my name and where it's written.
Which is an awesome thing.
But it is sort of like, you have to kind of, it's like a blessing and a curse if you don't like accept it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I think,
I guess just as a fan, you know, like,
no, I'm a fan too. And it's just like, I you know, obviously like no one likes, no one likes my songwriting more than me.
Yeah.
That's the most narcissistic thing I've ever said.
No, but I mean, you have to enjoy it.
But I would struggle with, like, how am I going to be, like, the world thinks of me as this one thing, and to a certain degree, that one thing is something of a exaggerated version of myself, on like, on stage and stuff like that. Like, it's kind of a character a little bit, but it's the character of me kind of.
Right. Like, I get that part of it.
Did you ever watch Parks and Rec?
Not all the way through, but I love what I've seen.
So I just remember it's like the character of Ron Swanson is basically a lot of aspects of Nick Offerman in real life.
Oh, yeah. On 11. Yeah. Level 11. Yeah.
So I kind of compare it to that. And it just, and but then when you're just like, okay, but you know what? I just want to be dad. And I just want to,
right,
work in the garden.
I get that too. Like that, the wrestling between those two worlds, and sometimes you just want to like be like a normal dude. And then for me, I recognize like how lucky I am to have this opportunity, and so that's the reason that I work like so hard for it. You know, I also really love it, thank God, but I recognize like, wow, like the catching lightning in a bottle thing.
Do you still like performing?
I look more now than I ever did before.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, which is really cool. Thankfully, like I had to start really working on being like a better, more professional singer so long ago, because like when I was a kid, I didn't have any like proper technique and I wound up like hurting my voice in the early days, you know, the first like couple records on. Once you're on tour and having to sing so much, like I couldn't sustain that. So very early on, I had to start focusing on singing as if it was my job, which it is, you know? And now, like, you know, 20 years later, like all of that work, I'm so glad I did it, because now singing is like this thing that I get so much joy from, like just singing and being able to do it well and with like confidence and control and power, just feels like unbelievable getting to do that. It just feels so good. I remember hearing this interview with Brian Eno on NPR where he started talking about this study that was done in like Sweden about longevity. Mm-hmm. And the top three things that you could do for longevity were dancing, singing, and camping.
Camping. Okay.
Yeah. So singing is one of the things you could do for longevity. And he had this theory that one really good aspect of it is you're, for a prolonged amount of time, you're taking in a massive amount of oxygen.
When you're singing.
Which is also the camping thing. You're getting like the freshest oxygen. And then dancing, you're generating like new blood cells and stuff. So it's a lot of this has to do with literally with oxygen, which is wild. I remember like a really, really tough time in my life. This is all when I was learning how to do the meditation and stuff. That same therapist, Buddhist therapist guy, like unrelated to anything I was going through, all my problems, he just goes, "You should go to the park." And I was like, that has nothing to do with like what I'm going through right now. He's like, you should go to the park. It's there for you. And we have this amazing park here in Chico. That's where I walked the dog this morning. And there's so many different kinds of trees there, these really mature trees, huge trees. And within a month, I had started to feel so much better. And this was at the darkest time of my life. And I began to have this feeling, this like inkling of a thought, like, I wonder if it's because I'm getting all this fresh oxygen. You know, so like my organs, the organ of my brain is like more, you know, oxygenated.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense.
But yeah, so anyway, the performing is, it feels good for multiple reasons.
That's interesting.
How about you? Do you feel like, are there times when you're like, I wish I didn't have to do this? Because I have those too, but.
I mean, you know, everyone has bad days, but
yeah.
Here's the thing. I hypothesize the thing that I love about my job is the creative part of it. It's like my absolute favorite thing is when I've written a song and it gets stuck in my head, but no one else has heard.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's like this little secret.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
The best.
And there's an aspect of touring and performing that's sort of like repetition. You know what I mean? That's like, it's hard. I imagine unless you're like an improviser, you know what I mean? Like a
right.
A jam band or a jazz player or something like that. I mean, I guess, yeah, but there's something about the kind of, the Groundhog Day of being on tour and the kind of monotony of that. But the thing is, I don't know that it's like some, you know how like some people say like they need to be on stage, like if they haven't,
right.
I hear comedians say this a lot where it's like they,
right.
if they go for like a couple weeks without doing a set, they get like antsy and, or like other performers, you know, and I kind of don't feel that way. Like I don't.
Oh, not at all, man. Me neither.
But the thing is, this is where why it's a hypothesis is that like, I've never been away from it long enough to know
if I would miss it or not. Huh. That's really interesting. Right.
I mean, we might be experiencing that now. You know what I mean? But
that's funny.
But,
I do see it as, I do that as well, facilitate the creative side.
Yeah. And I understand that. And logically that makes sense to me. It's just sort of like, you know, the price of admission for me to be able to keep being creative is like,
yeah, I'm the same way, 100%. It's almost like strange that I wound up some guy that's up on stage because it's so counter, you know, to like my inner, you know, truth or whatever. Like I'm not trying to have anybody look at me or think about me.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Like I remember seeing you play back in the day, and you had this sort of like, almost like this like kind of bounce thing you would do. Like when you weren't, like it was almost like a bunny hop kind of that you used to do.
Uh-huh.
And it was kind of like, and it was just like your thing sort of like you know how like Liam Gallagher, like he does that
pose
where he's got his hand behind his back or whatever. And it was just kind of like, all right, yeah, nobody does that. And like, nobody does that little Conley bounce. But, now I remember that. Was that like a conscious thing, and was it a conscious thing to stop doing it?
No. Well, then once I started playing guitar, I had to just sit there.
Yeah.
Well, then I developed a different kind of way to move. And really it's just keeping time.
Yeah. I noticed you kind of sway side to side when you play guitar.
Yeah. Yeah. I was on tour with Thursday last year at the end of the year.
Like Jersey explosion right there.
I know, right? And they would like sort of lovingly tease me about that, the Conley bop, the little like the way that my legs move now and stuff when I'm holding, I have to hold a guitar, but I still am dancing in time with the song.
Yeah. I think it's sweet. It reminds me of like old Paul McCartney like footage.
Oh, you know, well, there you go. You had me at Paul McCartney.
Like his little his head back and forth.
Have you ever seen him play?
No, I haven't.
I know, me neither. Jeez.
I don't know that I mean, I'm sure it would be great.
Are you not really a Beatles guy?
No, I am. Yeah. I just not as much, I don't think as much as you, but
I have a problem.
you have a Beatles problem.
Yeah.
The idea of going to a show that big kind of
makes me... Do you get like that agoraphobic or what is like the crowd when you're in a crowd you get tense?
I mean, I think if I'm being completely honest, I think my anxiety comes from the anticipation of stuff, and then once I'm actually in it, I'm usually okay.
Oh
like,
yeah,
like even going like we went to like going to like a sporting event, like we went to a Cubs game. When we played Riot Fest this year and we went to a Cubs game.
Oh, yeah.
And nice. I was kind of like stressed about going. And then when we were like outside going in, I was like, oh, this is a lot of people. And then once we got to our seats, I was fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I have this thing.
Yeah, it's the swarming mass of people. It's a little much.
I have this thing where I used to be really, really afraid of tornadoes. And
oh, geez, I can imagine.
And they are scary and you know, they can be scary, but I realized that it was like the waiting for it to happen that was the part that was really like stressing me out. But like once the sirens went off, everybody went to the basement, it was just like, I'm good, you know?
Right. It's like that. There's a quote. I mean, I hate to, I wish someone else had said this, but Woody Allen has a quote like, not afraid to die. I just don't want to be there when it happens.
That's a pretty good quote.
Yeah.
He's got some good quotes. He's problematic, but he's got some good quotes.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's I don't know what you call him, Warren Buffett, like that capitalist guy. His
the Oracle of Omaha.
Yeah. Yeah. His like business partner has a quote. He's like, I want to know how I die so that I know not to ever go there, or where I die so I know not to ever go there. Yeah.
It seems like that would, I mean, you know, if parables in science fiction have taught us anything, it seems like that wouldn't work.
I mean, like, and it really, yeah, it's that whole, the whole like anticipating it is worse than the actual event.
Yeah. And I think I feel that way about like health related stuff and getting older and all that kind of shit. And then going through this whole thing, like, you know, I've had diabetes since I was in sixth grade and I've always really thought of it as just an inconvenience. You know what I mean? Like, I'd always kind of be like, well, I don't have cancer. I just have this inconvenient disease.
Right.
And, now it's been really freaking me out because it's just like, you know, the immunocompromised, they keep using that phrase over and over again. And I talked to my endocrinologist about it and he's like, you know, I have pretty good control over it. You know, I keep my blood sugars low and all that stuff. And he's like, so you're better off than say someone who's, you know, morbidly obese with type 2 who doesn't really take care of their stuff. But it still, it definitely like freaks me out because then you're also like having this unseen, you know, the enemy is in the air. You know what I mean? Like, it just
right,
I can't think of anything.
Are you staying home are you very strict about the shelter in place kind of thing?
I've only been leaving the house to take the dogs for walks.
Yeah.
And I think today I'm going to have to go through the like Walgreens drive-thru to get my meds and stuff. But I've been having groceries delivered whenever possible, and which is now like 3 to 4 days ahead of time you have to order.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if it's like that, if you've messed with that at all where you are.
Not yet out here up north.
I did learn recently about there's a local kind of dish, like Sunflower Provisions is what it's called, and they do like a lot of like local, almost like a farmer's market in a grocery delivery kind of thing.
Right, so, right. I've heard about that stuff happening here.
They weren't that swamped, so I ordered from them. But it's, you know, it's weird. I mean, I love to cook, and so one of my things I like is like going to the grocery store and being like, what do we want to make today?
Man, I miss that. I really miss, like, I used to go to the store daily because whenever Luella's not here and she's with her mom, like, I don't keep the refrigerator stocked with stuff. You know, like, every other week when she's here, I have whatever she needs. But I love going to the store every day to figure out, like, what am I going to eat today?
Yeah.
Like, I love it. And seeing the people at the store, it was, like, a great routine. And now, like, I have that urge to, like, run to the store. But I'm like, well, if I only need one thing, that's irresponsible.
Well, and it's like we've always had, like, a, you know, a grocery list on the fridge, you know, or whatever. And it's like, as things run out, it's like, okay, well, I'm going to run up there. We need peanut butter, you know. And then now it's kind of like, well, we're just out of peanut butter till I ordered some. It'll be here Monday.
I know. You know? Like, I know. Yeah, like Luella has been really into making nachos, but you know, we blasted through that cheese. And then it's like, well, okay, well, I know that that's been a lot of fun to make, you know, different kinds of nachos, but like that's gonna have to wait till we run out of a bunch more stuff.
I don't think of you as a nachos guy.
I dabble. It's really been her thing. You know, so I'm just like, I'm around to supervise, make sure the house doesn't get burned down.
Speaking of which, you know what else fucking sucks in our house right now? Right before I left for tour, our oven died.
Oh, no.
So we don't have an oven right now.
That sucks.
Like the stovetop works, you know, like I can, you know.
That's a big blow.
And then we have a grill, so like I can make pizzas on the grill, but it's like,
seriously, like, I don't know what I would do. I use that thing multiple times a day.
I've had to be creative. And then Elliot, my son, is taking a culinary arts class.
Oh, cool.
In school. And they're like, okay, so for this assignment, you need to bake a cake. And he's like, well, and it was, okay.
Grilled pineapple.
I guess you'll have to go over to grandma's and use her oven, but we can't,
right.
We can't do that right now.
Oh, you know? Yeah. So, like, did he not make
a... He's making a no-bake cheesecake.
Oh, there you go. That's smart. That's creative.
Let me rephrase that. Once the cream cheese I ordered from the grocery store gets here, he's going to make a no-bake cheesecake.
Luella has been really into baking, which is awesome. I encourage that because it's creative, and also it's just such a great pastime. And then you're left with something delicious afterwards. She made from scratch a carrot cake. And so she looked up the recipe all by herself. No boxes were used. She made the icing and everything all by herself. And it was amazing. I was so impressed.
I just had a thought. When she was younger, I kind of assume that you probably don't like buy a ton of desserts or like candy and stuff
for her. Yeah.
Okay. So it's interesting because my kids have gotten really into baking and making desserts. And I wonder if there's a correlation there of like, I don't buy you cookies. I won't buy you cookies so that you have to make your own brownies.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely. That never had that stuff around.
Did you grow up with that kind of shit? Did you have like...
I really did. Yeah, I grew up with like the standard American diet. Like all of the above.
The sad?
Yeah. And... you know, and then like by the time I was 12 years old, I had an ulcer. You know, I used to drink so much soda. And then by the time I was 15, I had Crohn's disease.
Yeah.
And then that's when I had to start Well, I also became vegetarian right around then when I was 13 or 14. So my diet had started to change. But then I got really into that. Like I read The Diet for a New America and I got really into like all that.
I was going to say, were you a typical teenage vegetarian, which is like Taco Bell bean burritos and.
On tour back then, you couldn't find any vegetarian food anywhere. So you relied on those 99-cent burritos.
Yeah.
But when I was home, we had an amazing health food store in Princeton. That was like just like the amazing health food stores now that are everywhere. Mm-hmm. So we had one of those early ones. It was there in the 70s. So we had like good access to quality vegetarian food there. But then I learned about, you know, what was in our food and stuff. And I didn't know that later that this would help with the Crohn's disease. But at a certain point in time, my Crohn's was really, really bad, and I had to get off of my parents' insurance when I turned 23.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, a friend of mine had given me this book called The Tao of Health, Sex, and Longevity. And in the health section, there was all this information about what happens in your body when you eat certain foods as opposed to others. For example, you know, when you eat carbohydrates, your body secretes a certain enzyme to break those down, but when you eat protein it secretes a different enzyme, and when you eat them both together your body doesn't know what to do, so it just spits out one of them, and so the food remains only partially digested. So anyway, through the help of like the proper food combinations that I learned in that book and eating vegetarian, and then with the mindfulness and actually calming myself down, so I had much less you know, like of that emotional, you know, like when you have butterflies in your stomach, it's like acid getting released in there.
Mm.
So I had a lot less of that stuff happening. And then my Crohn's went away.
So do you not have Crohn's anymore at all? Or is it just like in remission?
Yeah. Well, it's in remission. I mean, I guess it doesn't, like an autoimmune disorder doesn't go away forever, but it's been in remission for, let's see, it's been in remission for 15 years now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right around the time Luella was born, the same year Luella was born, I remember her mom really wanted me to get a colonoscopy to see like what was up. And so I was cleared then. This is 2005. So thankfully, I'll definitely, I'll mess with a carrot cake that she makes. Heck yeah. Give me some of that.
I guess that's what we were originally talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you tell me one time that you had it was like illegal for people, since you had a Crohn's diagnosis, it was illegal for people to refuse you access to the bathroom?
No, I never knew about that, but that would have been awesome to know if that's true.
I don't know if it is or not. I feel like someone told me that, or like they had a card,
I've heard of that. I've heard of that. I think that was after my time. Like if I had still been struggling with it, I imagine it would be 15 years worse at this point, you know, and I definitely would have needed that card.
Are you still vegetarian now?
I eat fish now, but I am, aside from that, I'm pescatarian.
Pescatarian?
Yeah. Yeah.
Does Lou have her be vegetarian too? Or I guess she's kind of old enough to make up her own mind.
Yeah. About like, I'd say about 3 years ago, she decided on her own to be vegetarian. And that was not something, I don't think her mom was like fully psyched about that at first, but Lou, it's all by herself. She, I don't think she even really eats too much fish. She's more veg than me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But she's way into it. And like, I think a lot of kids from her generation are interested in it due to like the impact on the environment and stuff. So
it's
cool to see them be engaged in world politics in different ways.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Lily, my daughter, her and her bandmates, they practice in my garage. Right. And, but they're mad for McDonald's, and it's just like,
oh, I bet, man.
It's such a weird, like, I don't know. It's just strange to me.
Yeah, I mean, I remember McDonald's. This stuff was good.
I don't really have anything against McDonald's necessarily over any other fast food.
It was just delicious. Kind of
like, it's weird that it's just like it's McDonald's specific. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, it's not like.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Burger King.
They're brand loyal.
Yeah, they're brand loyal. They love the yeah. founder. Did you ever see that movie?
Yeah, what's the name again? It's like, yeah, I did. It was good. Yeah. I thought. Did you like that?
Yeah, it was good.
I thought it was actually fascinating because, and I think that was one of my first times really even thinking about branding.
Mm.
And I thought it was fascinating.
I don't like it that I feel more comfortable talking about my brand now.
I know it is. It's bizarre, but I also, it makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, it does make sense, but it just feels like, I think coming up in like, you know, a post Fugazi punk rock scene.
Right.
It's just kind of like, ugh. Like,
but even Fugazi, that's their brand is like.
Is not doing merchandise and not.
Yeah. Like that's what they are.
I know. I just remember
it's interesting.
There was a Gene Simmons from Kiss, who I think is about as smarmy as you can get. Saying he didn't want Kiss to be the biggest band in the world. He wanted it to be the biggest brand in the world.
Oh, wow. I've never heard that. I kind of love that.
I mean, it's I love the self-awareness.
Yeah, unabashed.
But it's kind of like, ugh.
I don't want to do that. I know. I definitely get the same level of douche chills as like a punk rocker, but it's just fascinating.
Well, I think it's I'm just like kind of noticing with like Lily's generation, they seem to be more kind of aware of that without even really realizing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's, I don't know. I think because like maybe because when we were coming up, it was still sort of like, there weren't any like, I guess there were niches, but they were less defined. You know what I mean? And you'd play
like
shows where it's like a ska band and a hardcore band and a pop punk band. You know what I mean? And it wasn't like
right. And there wasn't that self-aware thing.
Yeah,
it was just people just expressing themselves.
But I do have that kind of like I don't know, certain terminology I've always like kind of resisted. I didn't for the longest time feel comfortable referring to myself as an artist. I still don't, I still don't really like it. I would rather say songwriter.
Songwriter, totally.
Because that at least feels kind of like, okay, yeah, I can own that.
Yeah, yeah.
But.
Yeah, there's the pretentious like tagline that comes along with that.
Oh God, or God forbid somebody say I'm a poet. Ugh.
Right. I mean, I definitely talk writing poetry, but I wouldn't call myself a poet. There's something lame about the word itself.
It's really showing our prejudices now. Yeah. I don't know what it is. I think of poetry. I think of like slam poetry stuff, or you know, like coffee shops in high school.
Yeah. Yeah. I think of the feathered, like a quill.
I don't know why. Well, that's how I write everything now, with a feather.
Nice, quill. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's harder and harder to find the pens, you know.
I mean, you know, I really think it's kind of like when people talk about vinyl. It's like, I really think that it makes the lyric writing process better to go really super analog with it and have a ink and quill.
Absolutely. You get more cred. You get more points, yeah. Scene points.
Yes. You're more intellectualized.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I want to ask, do you have any thoughts on how, like, are you going to try and do some things to, like, I mean, who knows when we're ever going to be able to tour again? Like, have you thought about that? Like, stuff that you want to do during this time? Or if you want to try, have you thought about trying to, like, how you're going to make a living the next couple of months, maybe longer?
Well, we've got an incredible management team, mm-hmm. and I feel safe and confident that they like they're so good at what they do that they'll figure out a way to make it work, you know, for us and for our fans and stuff. And I do believe that, you know, the like the industry of music is crucial. So I mean, you know, imagine a world where there's no music. It's just like, and even the birds aren't singing. It's just awkward. But I do believe somehow that there will, this will all figure itself out in terms of the business side of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm actually kind of psyched to have so much time in the studio now.
Is that what
I think that I've been longing for this amount of time in the studio. And so I'm like excited about trying out different ideas. Like there's like thousands of songs I've never been able to get to, like, you know, like melodies that drift into your head in the middle of the night and somewhere in between Cincinnati and, you know, Alabama or something. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had time to like go and actually write a song around it. So I'm excited to do that. I'm also working on another album with a friend of mine, Lloyd Vines, which is really exciting. And then there's the whole live stream thing. While it's a new, it's a new style of performing for me. I've really been enjoying it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I think there's got to be some way to make that, if let's say we aren't touring the way we used to tour, like I'm definitely ready to get a decent setup here at my studio so I can make it look good and sound good here and people can have a good time still with the music. How about you? What are you thinking?
I don't know. I mean, I just kind of started doing the live streams just to do them, you know?
And yeah,
those now seem to be sort of like an excuse for me to like learn old songs or learn covers and just kind of, and I only do them for like a half an hour. And so it's just like, okay, so this isn't like my whole day. You know what I mean?
Right.
But yeah, I just kind of assume, like I started writing. I haven't been writing very much lately because we've been, you know, working. And so I just started writing and it was just like, okay, well, let's throw together some new Radar State songs and let's maybe, you know, let's see what comes of it. And then people are like, you should do another new AMS record. And I'm like, well, I guess I have all these pre-existing brands, Chris.
I know, man. It's awesome. It's awesome. You've got so many outlets. I do think that that's the most exciting aspect of this is that there's all the time in the world to be writing and recording.
Yeah, as long as you can, you know, pay your rent or your mortgage.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't know. It's wild. I guess, yeah, that's, I'm excited about that too. I'm excited about writing and recording. I think I'm just a little anxious in that touring is the only like aspect of the job that you kind of have an idea of what your income is going to be.
Right. Definitely.
You know, if it's like, oh, if I know I'm getting $100 to play this show, then I can kind of budget for that.
Yeah. I mean, I've been so used to it, not like ever since the dawning of the internet, not being like a predictable job,
mm-hmm.
like so long ago, just like realizing that, like, if I don't love doing it, you know, like this is, it's a nightmare, you know, like definitely stay in school, kids.
Oh, I think you can make a, I mean, hell, I don't know now, but I think you,
yeah,
I would have said 6 months ago, like Lily and her band are like, we want to go on tour. And I'm like, yeah, you can totally do that. I mean, and you should do that when you're 18 and you don't have any, you know, expenses, you know, or,
right.
Or kids to feed and, you know, get that experience. It's a really fun, especially those first couple tours.
Oh, man, it's, like, it's awesome.
It's an adventure, and you're just like...
Oh, it's the best.
It's like, you do what? You put chili on spaghetti? Weird.
Yeah, seeing that is that's an incredible part of what we get to do, and in the early days, so it's so eye-opening just to see how people live different different places in different ways.
Yeah, and if you're lucky enough to go overseas, and you're like, you know...
Yeah.
What do they eat in Europe? And why, I mean, not even Europe. What do they eat in Germany? Yeah. You know, like, what do you...
Yeah, and you see people are people everywhere. They're just doing it differently.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think...
We'll figure it out.
I think that the creativity that comes out of this whole experience will hopefully be, you know, pretty outstanding, I would think. Just as a whole.
I think so, too.
You know, like...
I think it's going to be great. And there's like a lot of people saying, like, you know, like Isaac Newton figured out the laws of gravity when I think that was during some sort of time like this. There was some reason that people had to be isolated. So out in isolation, great things can occur.
It's also kind of necessity is the mother of invention too, you know, like.
Right. Yeah.
If you can't do something with one hand, you learn how to use the other hand, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or you're like Daredevil. I'm a big believer in that. You're like Daredevil. You lose your sight, and all of a sudden, you become a ninja. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I'm the
eternal optimist in me is unafraid of where it's all going and more curious.
I agree with that. On a human level, I am worried about me getting sick.
Yeah.
You know, like,
no, definitely. The real practical concerns and fears are, I can't help but be gripped by that.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, I'm going to let you go. We've done an hour.
Okay. All right. Well, this was rad. Thank you.
First time doing this in like 5 years, something like that.
I know. Yeah. First of the second pandemic podcast.
It's the second wave. Second.
Yeah. The second wave of podcasts has begun. Yeah.
Second wave emo, second wave podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
it was great to get to do it.
I'd like to check in from time to time.
Absolutely. That sounds good. Even monthly would be cool with me.
Okay. Cool, man. Well, thanks, bud.
Okay, dude. Hey, well, huge high five across the sky for Lily tomorrow on her big day. That's so amazing.
I'll tell you said that.
Okay.
All right. Bye, bud.
All right, man. Bye.